From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made when a high school senior applied to USC, the University of Southern California. Her application indicated that her test scores were strong, and she was a star athlete on the school crew team. She could bring both her academic record and her athletic skills to USC, and she got in. On Tuesday, we learned that she was neither a strong student nor a star athlete. Her name is Olivia Jade, and she's most known for her online videos. Her mother is famous actress Lori Loughlin. Now, prosecutors allege that Olivia's parents essentially paid a $500,000 bribe to get her into USC. Instead of just making a big donation to USC, which is a very effective way to get your kids into school, prosecutors say that Loughlin and her husband paid tens of thousands of dollars to a college counselor, William Rick Singer, to facilitate someone taking standardized tests on their child's behalf. And they paid additional bribes to convince coaches and administrators to create fake records of athletic achievement for their daughter. And it worked. This week, prosecutors charged roughly 50 parents, counselors, test administrators, and college coaches in what they have described as, quote, the largest college admission scam ever prosecuted by the Department of Justice. Lori Loughlin wasn't the only celebrity involved either. You probably saw Felicity Huffman was arrested this week for similar charges in the same scam. U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling offered a blunt assessment of the scheme. He called the parents, quote, a catalog of wealth and privilege, end quote. And Lelling boasted that these arrests are the antidote to that privilege. He told reporters, quote, there can be no separate college admissions for the wealthy, end quote. But can we be real for a moment? There is a separate college admission system for the wealthy. Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman did not have to bribe people to fake their kids' test scores and achievements. They could have simply written a check to the school of their choice, which is legal, and which greatly improves the chances that their child will get in. That will continue to be legal, and there's nothing that any U.S. attorney can do about that. Now, writing for the Democrat and Chronicle, reporter Mary Chow described the ultra-competitive world that her daughter is now immersed in as a high school, I should say, as a high-achieving high school student. And Mary's trying to help, but she can't guarantee her daughter will get into the school that she wants. Most valedictorians in this country will face at least one rejection letter. So this hour, a conversation about privilege, higher education, who gets in, and the value in letting kids face failure or rejection at times. Our guests include Mary Chow, reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle, who wrote that piece that got our attention yesterday. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Evan.
And also with us is Emily Rittenberg, a mom of two, coach and owner of Nurture Now LLC. Welcome back to the program to you.
Thank you for having me.
It was the story when it broke on Tuesday was pretty appalling to a lot of people, Mary. And, you know, I'm not surprised that your piece is getting a lot of attention, too, just kind of sharing your own experience, which is very different than the celebrities there.
Right. As an average person, this is what you have to go through if you have a high-achieving child and you wish to get her or him into an elite institution. And it's a multi-year process. It's almost like, let's say, training for an elite athlete. If you have a kid who's Olympic potential, it's the same rigmarole.
Well, it's got Emily and me concerned about what's ahead for our kids, because our kids are younger than yours. But I am not looking forward to the college application process, I admit. Are you?
I mean, I was a high school counselor for 5 years, so I'm a little bit excited for it.
Oh, you are. Okay. Okay. But it's so competitive. And I get, as a parent, I'm not going to claim some sort of ethereal perfection here. I've had moments where I go, boy, my boy, should I let him have that, or can I let him fail more? It's hard watching your kids struggle at times, but that's also parenting. And this is like the ultimate refusing to let anything happen to your child of consequence. I found it appalling. How did you feel?
Well, I felt that they were using their kids as basically accessories. This is my latest Louis Vuitton bag or Chanel bag. Look, my daughter went to USC, and there's no real interest in education. It's all about basically status, and that's wrong. So that's the part that really gets me, is that the kid didn't want to go to USC, and the parents were using the children as accessories.
Hmm. What did you make of it, Emily?
I could not agree more. I totally agree that the kids were totally used. Supposedly, they didn't know. That's questionable because there was pictures taken of them posing in athletic stances and stuff like that. But I think it just illustrates the worst of the worst of what this process can turn into. It does not always look like this for a lot of families, but this is an illustration of the worst of the worst.
Well, and when Mary says that Olivia Jay, the daughter of Lori Loughlin, might not have even really wanted to go to USC. And this is more about the parents' desires to have a child in some sort of an elite school. Though no offense to USC. I mean, it's a good school. I don't know. But anyway, here's Olivia Jade. This is a video that she posted. She posts a lot of videos of herself. She's got a lot of followers. This is what she said about getting into USC. Let's listen.
I don't know how much of school I'm going to attend, but I'm going to go in and talk to my deans and everyone and hope that I can try and balance it all. But I do want the experience of, like, game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
I don't really care about school. As you guys all know, I do want the experience of game days and partying.
And that's really upsetting because there are so many hardworking kids trying to get a spot in any of these schools to try to further themselves and further their education. And this spot is given to a young lady who doesn't even appreciate it.
She doesn't seem to want to be there other than... And you can go to parties, by the way, and not be a student. You don't...
Right.
There's lots of parties in lots of places. You can live near the campus, I guess. But maybe there's something status-wise. But, you know, Emily, again, I want to be fair. There were some people saying, hey, that's a low blow. Don't post the kids' video. This is about the parents. Is it unfair to even listen to that audio? Or, you know, what do you think here? Is it fair to at least examine, did the child want to be there? What's the story here?
This is not a very young child. This is a child that is entering into adulthood. So is it okay? Is it not okay? It really kind of is a fine line. But she put it out there. Her parents didn't put the video out there. She put it out there of herself saying these things. And this is a consequence. And I'm sure that is a word that their family does not like hearing, that there's consequences for their actions and behaviors. But this is a consequence of her putting that own, you know, her own words out into the public sphere.
Every one of us has to make decisions on whether we let our kids fail. Now, yes, the celebrities involved are and the uber wealthy parents involved in this scam, this alleged scam, to be fair, have more means than anyone at this table will probably ever have. That's just life. But we also have more means than a lot of people in the world have. That's also true. And we have to make decisions on, are you going to let your kid fail? Are you going to let them lose at a game? Are you going to let them not get into a school? And it can be hard. What do you see as the value of allowing failure, Emily?
Failure is so, so valuable. If you shield your kids from failing, you shield them from a very important life experience that they will face at some point. And whether or not you let them experience that in the safety of your family, of them having school teachers who care about them, a network of friends, hopefully. If you don't allow them to fail, you're really denying them practice for life.
I think that's very well said. And how do you feel about, especially now with the daughter who's going through the college admissions process?
You know, my daughter is in a musical theater, and she's kind of in the mediocre end, and she's used to rejection. She'll try, and she'll fail. And she understands all this, and I'm going to let her try. She understands what the odds are, as I illustrated in the column. The odds are very much against anyone who wants to go into elite institutions, whether you have money or don't have money. They're rejecting probably 90 to 95% of the straight A kids, and you have to have something that stands out, and that's just the odds. It's like winning the lottery. So she is perfectly okay with rejection, and when we get to the application process, we're going to pick about 6 schools that she would all be happy at, and we're not going to overdo it and apply to 20-something schools, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, Joel writes to us and says, a lot of this is about having your own children as reflections of your parenting.
Right.
You know, so I want my kid to go to X school as opposed to where do I want that, you know, where do they want to be? So let's talk about the process that your daughter's gone through, mm-hmm. because you detailed it in your piece for the Democrat and
right.
Chronicle.
And that's just my recent trip.
Just your recent trip to Cornell?
And Binghamton.
Cornell and Binghamton. So, you know, she's creating a list. How much time have you thought as a parent, I don't know if I'd love it if you went there, or I would love it.
Have that in the back of my mind.
Okay.
I mean, what I like versus what she likes are entirely different, but I have to let her try. And I mean, my mind, I'm hoping she goes to a small liberal arts college that would appreciate her and probably award her with a merit scholarship. But I'm a parent, so I have to let her do this. And then we will all come together as a family and decide. And maybe even if she gets in, it's not financially viable for us. So those are all discussions that families have to have.
Your daughter is an outstanding student. And the interesting thing is, in reading your piece, she's doing the kind of things that would make so many parents proud, and I'm sure it does make you proud.
Right.
But she also knows, as good as her numbers are, it's right now probably not enough for like a Cornell.
No. I mean, she's okay. She's like on the...
Okay.
On the edge.
So what are the numbers? Give us how she's doing.
It's embarrassing enough to be my daughter. I don't know if I'm allowed to tell her numbers publicly.
You wrote a column on it.
She is in the 93rd percentile in SAT and 96th percentile for ACT, which is the top 4% and top 7%. So that's how revealing exact numbers. And she's like a 3.9 GPA.
So she's an outstanding student.
Right.
She's involved in extracurricular. She cares about what she's doing. She's diligent. And yet she knows right now...
Yeah,
she's probably got to. She may have to retake tests to try to get into.
Yeah, she is trying to get in the top 2%. She understands that, and that's something she wanted to do on her own without any parental prodding. We were perfectly fine. She will get into a fine school with her scores and her grades. Lots of schools would be happy to have her, but even if she doesn't want to go to Ivy League, she wants to do that for herself because this is her thing. I mean, she's not an athlete. She's a smart kid. So for her, that's her challenge. That's her goal.
Now, if she doesn't get in to the school of her choice, her top choice, and, mm-hmm. and that's life, and mm-hmm. you know, you're going to work with her. You say she's prepared for that eventuality.
Right.
If she sees a story like this, mm-hmm. the scandal that the Justice Department is boasting about busting up this week, does she feel almost cheated? Do you feel offended on her behalf or on behalf of the students who are close but don't get in, knowing that they're essentially parents paying their kids way in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so many hardworking kids like her. When we went on these tours, we've been going on college tours for the last year. These are all of the valedictorians all around the country, and they have worked hard all their lives. And then to see something like this happen, it's just chilling.
Well, I want to take a phone call here, and then we're gonna kind of broaden the discussion to what is fair and what fairness looks like for kids and frankly, the role of parents here. Let me grab Mike and Henrietta, who wants to talk about the value of failing. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
That leads right into what I was going to talk about, the fairness of things. And honestly, to take it another step, when we give trophies out for losing – whether it's kids soccer or stuff, I have no problem with participation, you know, like a medal or something. But when we teach kids, well, you can still kind of win even when you fail, that has set into our demographics all across the board to include our politics. And if you look at the debacle with Amazon, for example, you'll see that they lost out on something huge, but they still won. And they advertise it as winning, and we won. So I kind of think when we're in an age of, you know, social media, as long as we lose but we still kind of come off as winning, we still kind of feel justified in our actions. And that is exactly why I think that young lady, her social media account, that should be taken into account. That's her word saying she doesn't care about school, and she's at an age where she should be. So I just wanted to throw that out there as far as fairness, winning, and losing, and the value of getting back up off the ground when you're knocked down and carrying on and trying harder to succeed.
Yeah, Mike, thank you for the phone call. What do you think, Emily?
Yeah, you know, there's a great author out there. His name is Alfie Cohn, and he wrote this book called something like... Rewards.
We'll get the title.
Punishment.
We'll look it up. Yeah,
something like that. But it's really, the book is all about how too many awards are not helping your children. If they're getting a participation award, or as the caller just mentioned, a reward for even not winning the game, it's really not helpful. It puts pressure on our children to perform when the goal should not necessarily be achievement, but just doing their best. I mean, when you're talking about young children, they should just be working on skill development and doing their best. And when, you know, they get older, it does turn into actually proving their ability, whether it's sports or academics. The way the world works, not everyone's going to be a winner. That's just the reality. And if they can't face that in high school, they're in for a really, really rude awakening when they get to college or beyond.
The book is called Punished by Rewards.
Punished by Rewards.
Punished by Rewards, if you want to check out the book that Emily is talking about there. What do you make of the caller's comments there, Mary?
Absolutely right. We're afraid to hurt children's feelings at this point, and we shouldn't be. Failure is a part of life. What happens in adulthood when they're faced rejection all the time? When they apply for their first job, they're going to be rejected plenty. So the earlier you get your children used to rejection and failure and saying it's not you, it's not personal, it's just part of the process, the better it is for your kids.
Yeah, here's a couple of other comments. Kitty writes to us and say there's no possibility that Olivia Jade or any of the other children involved were not aware of what their parents were doing on their behalves. The Common App requires the signature verification. The extracurricular and sports would have been listed. Kids are equally culpable as the parents. That's from Kitty. You look like you're on the fence about that one, Emily.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, it's tough because high schoolers, as much as we want to see them as kind of young adults, they're getting into becoming adults. They are not quite there. So what exactly is that age that they should be held accountable? That's a tough one, and it probably varies kid to kid. When exactly they mature into adulthood.
I think this is mostly about the parents. And I think even playing the clip from Olivia Jade is about the parents. What kind of child? Not to say that we're perfectly capable of controlling everything our child does. We like to think about that. It's not true. But I generally think if you have a college-age child who's like, yeah, I got into USC. I'm not really here to go to school, though, guys. I'm here to party. I would be really embarrassed if that were my child, and I would have a long discussion about that, as opposed to, well, there's dozens of videos like this. So I'm not sure, Kitty, if I agree that there's equal culpability here. The child can't get into the school if the parents aren't willing to create the scam in the first place, kind of to Emily's point there. Is there equal culpability in your eyes here, Mary?
I think she is old enough to know better, but she's probably so caught up in her Instagram persona that she feels like this is part of being popular. I want a party. I'm not really here to go to school. And I'm not quite sure, because my daughter's not that age yet, you know, at what age do you realize this is wrong? Because their brains are still developing.
Alex writes to us on Twitter and says, this is in no way a defense for Olivia Jade or the absurdity of all of this, but I know how important having both sides of a story are to you. She did apologize. We all say stupid things we regret, especially at that age. Alex links to her apology video. Look, Alex, I want to say this as clearly as I can. I believe almost everybody is redeemable, or I think there can always be amends made and hard work done to fix that. I'm not sure one short apology video right after sort of the scandal breaks is an indication that you really get it. I think it's sort of what is de rigueur in these cases, but we'll see going forward, and I certainly hope there are lessons learned, and I'm open to that. This isn't saying that Olivia Jade will always be this, you know, snobby kid who doesn't get it. That's not fair at all to her, and you want to give people room to grow. It's a question of who's actually benefiting from their wealthy, wealthy, wealthy parents. And, you know, so you've got the Justice Department saying, look, this is our way of pushing back against privilege. Well, I want to listen to a clip that came from this program in December. And I will say at the outset, you're about to hear a very honest clip here. I really appreciate this. And this is not at all to sort of denigrate. In fact, it's to praise the honesty of our guests here. We hosted Jonathan Burdick, who's the Dean of College Admission for the University of Rochester, and Ian Mortimer, who's the Vice President of Enrollment Management for RIT. We were talking about legacy admissions on that particular program, and that's because Harvard University in last fall was under the microscope for their own process of admissions, allegations of discrimination against Asian students, and also the question of whether they overdo legacy admissions. So legacy admissions were sort of under the microscope. But the subject of giving preference to the children of big donors came up, which is legal, by the way. This is not illegal. That's why I say, I don't know why the celebrities didn't just write direct checks. If you're going to give away $500,000, just write a check to the school and they'll let your kid get in. Give Burdick and Mortimer credit. They did not try to hide the fact that, yes, if you give schools big donations, they will give at least special treatment to your children, and that is legal. So let's listen, starting with Burdick from the University of Rochester and then Ian Mortimer from RIT.
Been in admissions for almost 35 years now, and it's never been the case that legacy students just get an entirely separate kind of review independent of everybody else. Donors, as you mentioned, will, because that's it's important to a whole other branch of the university, and it makes a difference in the university's ability to be successful and to grow over the long term.
Should children of big donors to University of Rochester or Harvard or anywhere, should they get a preference?
Donors' children, if it's really important to a donor that their child has a chance to be at Rochester and they are strong enough to make it through, then that's gonna count for something.
Because that's just the reality of money in the world? I mean, I'm not trying to be crass.
Well, tuition is a driver at a place like the University of Rochester, and you want to make sure that you've made things as fair as possible for all those families that are paying tuition. On the other hand, somebody who's donating $25 million for a building is also contributing to the institution in a pretty profound way, and to, at the very least, to give their children the time of day and to pay attention to their opportunities and to talk to them, those are things we would extend clearly to anybody like that. We won't bend over to the point of admitting them even when they're not qualified, because that doesn't serve anybody's interest.
There are lines that you would say to a donor, we're thrilled if you want to make this contribution to the institution, we cannot have your child come to this.
I've had to turn down some pretty illustrious donors' children because the children just, based on what they were had actually done and what they were ready for, or even they were sort of clearly voting with their actions that they didn't really want to do that. This wasn't the place they wanted to be, even though it was important to their parents.
Okay, interesting. Ian?
And I think the other thing from experience is that if the son or daughter is not academically prepared at that given time, creating a pathway for access through a personal admissions process is oftentimes acceptable. So if the student, you know, if there's a conversation that the student just cannot be, is most likely not going to be successful, and here are the reasons why. However, if you know, the student does A and B and then applies again in the spring and meets these conditions, you know, usually there's if you create an alternative path, then people seem to be cool.
That is Jonathan Burdick and Ian Mortimer from University of Rochester and RIT answering very directly about the advantages given and the preference given to the children of big donors to universities. And they're explaining why. Mary, was that persuasive to you? What did you make of it?
Well, what I picked up from that interview is Jonathan gave the figure of $25 million. So maybe $500,000 isn't enough to buy a seat at USC.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We're assuming that if Lori Loughlin and her husband decided to call USC and say, hey, we really want our daughter to get in there, here's $500,000, they might have said, it's going to have to be $3 million. I mean, I don't know what the baseline is. It's true.
And to Jonathan's point, he's right about legacy. My husband and I are double NYU legacies, but we're not donors. So I don't think my child would get any preferential treatment, even though we're both double legacies.
Okay. Emily, what did you make of what you heard there for them?
What I heard was that they still had a standard. I heard them say that it can help for sure. But there is still a certain standard that they expect the child to get to. And if they don't meet that standard, they'll find an alternative way. They'll say if they do this over the next, you know, semester or year, then they'll be re-reviewed. So I guess that was a little bit heartening that they're at least saying we just won't accept anyone over for a donation. You know, another angle of this is that I have a good friend who's a college admissions counselor, and she said that the kids who apply if you apply and you say that you do not need financial aid, that you can pay full tuition, you also have a leg up than the kids who apply who say they need financial aid. And that was at a small private liberal arts university.
Also, there in the remarks from Jonathan Burdick from the University of Rochester was his contention that if you can make a big contribution to a school, that helps the school and it might help other students. I mean, it helps other students either in their pursuits while they are students, or it helps other students in the affordability, because big contributions can add up and help reduce the need for full load, and very few students pay the full boat anymore. Does that argument hold water, Mary? In other words, you're, you know, Harvard, and I'm going to say, look, Mary, my son is on the edge. He's probably not getting in. But here's $5 million, and you know, that's going to help you reduce tuition for other students. Don't you want my kid to go to your school?
See, I'm somewhat torn about that. Yes, it is a business, and then their money does help other needy students who cannot afford to pay to go to a Harvard otherwise. But, you know, I am a believer in a meritocracy. You know, the best should get in. And then I don't know how they even decide, because everybody is meritorious when they apply to these schools. How do you decide from all of these valedictorians and class presidents who gets in and who doesn't? I almost think they should go into a lottery system. Anyone who meets these criteria gets their name drawn, and that's perhaps the fairest way, without regard to legacy or donor or whether or not they have money to pay for the school.
I am appreciative of the fact that U of R and RIT participate in that program, and I hope they don't resent me using that audio, but I think it relates here, because right now the conversation is about the advantages that the wealthy have, and there is clearly an advantage. That's just the way of the world right now. When the earlier caller, that was Mike and Henrietta, was talking about, you know, nobody's actually failing. Look at the wealthiest people, for example, on Wall Street, who crashed the economy. Well, they created, they chopped up subprime mortgages, and they created the credit default swaps, and they created all of these instruments that were essentially ticking time bombs bound to fail. And by the time they failed, a lot of people got hurt, but they didn't get hurt.
Oh, they took their money and ran.
And almost nobody went to jail.
Yeah.
You know, so there's
not
a whole...
slap on the wrist. Lehman Brothers closed, and life goes on.
So there's not a whole lot of consequences of failure for the ultra wealthy. And I think that's why this story has kind of touched a nerve as well here. Let me get Jim in Pittsford on the phone next. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, Evan. It's actually Tim.
Oh, hi, Tim.
How you doing today?
Good. Yeah, go ahead.
Good. I blame the parents mostly, and I think it's because all parents want to say, my kid goes to this school or this school, and then they convince their child that that's the only way to go. And I'll give an example, but my wife is a U of R alum, and we have specifically said this, that our kids are not going to the University of Rochester to be history majors, and that's nothing against history majors, but if they're going to pay $70,000 a year, or even with scholarships, 50 or 60, which is a ton of money, they are going there to be a doctor. And you can go and major in history at MCC and then transfer to Geneseo, which is a great school. But you talk to other parents, and you almost say, if the word SUNY is brought up, the reaction is, oh, that's great. You know, instead of if you say, oh, Harvard or an Ivy League school, then they light up like there's something important about their kid and special about their kid. And the, you know, a kid at 16, 17, 18, the only reason they know the importance of these schools is because of their parents, because they have convinced them that it is important that they go to this school because it's going to set them up for the rest of their life. When there's plenty of schools around here or out of state or whatever, smaller schools that they're going to get a great education at for a lot less money. It's still a lot of money no matter where you go. And they are going to be set up for the rest of their lives after they graduate. And that should be the importance. And rejection is just one of those things in life that everyone is going to have to, or most of us are going to have to deal with. And kids really, you know, I don't know if it's the college process, but maybe little things as they get older, they have to fall and stumble on their own and learn how to deal with it. Because once they go to college, guess what? You are on your own. So you better learn how to deal with failure at some point. Learn from it, get better, and you'll be a better person for it. But it starts with us.
Tim, thank you. I appreciate that. And I feel like a dinosaur. $9,000 a year was what I paid to go to school. And all it got me was this lousy job. It's pretty good.
Right.
I mean, I think there's so much pressure that we're training students to think there's a narrow range of schools. And if you don't get into these schools, okay, your life is going to be...
I think there's peer pressure. I mean, the pressure's not coming from us, the parents, at least in my situation. Going to high-achieving school, hanging out with high-achieving peers, they're all comparing their SAT scores, and they're all eyeing the name-brand colleges. But I make sure my daughter knows exactly why she wants a name-brand college, what is it about that school that you're attracted to instead of just chasing a name? I mean, for example, I didn't know this, but Cornell was the only Ivy League school that offers a fashion program, and she's been in love with fashion since she was 5 years old. So there's a rhyme and reason, and it's not chasing an Ivy League name. She's not applying to Harvard or Yale or Princeton or anything else.
That sounds like a very healthy conversation to have, though, and as long as you feel like she can articulate exactly why she wants this as opposed to the status.
Right.
Then okay, then we can talk about some of the comparative merits.
But it is a very, I guess, competitive atmosphere when it comes to the high school that she goes to. There are a lot of high achievers, and when you're with a bunch of high achievers, you want that status symbol as a kid. Mm. It's like getting the Ugg boots.
See, I wouldn't know about that. What do you make of Tim's call?
You know, I agree that that the name brand status, as Mary was saying, it just evolves. It becomes a thing that it shouldn't be, but it is. But I will say, I think the conversation is a little bit more nuanced, because if you, as an adult, even say that you went to an Ivy League school, there is a certain level of status and, I don't know, panache that brings you, or something. It brings you some sort of status. And there is also separate networking groups for Ivy Leaguers. So I don't think it's nothing, these Ivy League schools, and that, you know, you could go to another school and have a perfectly good career, perfectly great life. But these Ivy League schools, they do have something to them. Unfortunately, but maybe fortunately, it's really nuanced. It's complicated.
So we have a lot of emails and phone calls. People are fired up about this story today, and that's I think that's a healthy thing. It's generated a lot of good conversation. So we're going to grab your phone calls. Josh, Rich on the phone. We got a lot of emails to work through with our guests here. You just heard Emily Rittenberg, who is a coach and owner of Nurture Now LLC. Mary Chow is a reporter with the Democrat and Chronicle, who told her family story in the Democrat and Chronicle this week in response to this national scandal, the story about the Department of Justice charging dozens of people, including celebrity parents, in a college admissions scam, basically alleging that parents were bribing, using tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, to get their kids, who would not have gotten in, into the schools of their choice. Let's take our only break of the hour. Back to your phone calls and feedback on this subject next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, the Rochester Music Hall of Fame has a new class of inductees ready to enter. We're going to talk about who was selected and why. Now, music journalist Frank DeBlaise says he thinks the Hall of Fame has sort of lost the plot, and too many of the inductees have very tenuous connections to Rochester. But there are some names that I think you're going to want to meet and learn about, and we'll discuss how the process works Friday on Connections. I'm laughing. Mary Chow is warning Emily and me that by the time our kids are going to college, it'll be, what do you think?
Half a million each.
Half a million
right
each
now,
for 4 years.
Right now, the sticker price for my daughter for private is about
$300. Oh, yay, yay.
But nobody pays full price, Mary.
Some do.
Okay, yeah. Okay, Josh in Rochester next. That's a great thought. Josh in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Josh.
Thank you for taking my call, Evan. I have 2 points. One is that both of my kids went to Ivy League schools without being top athletes or legacy or us paying, being donors or anything like that. And they both worked really hard at the schools. And it turns out one of my children had a wonderful time at an Ivy League school. And my other child thought that the professors were really only involved in, only cared about their research and were not very involved with the students at all. So that's 1 point. And the other thing that the scandal brings out is I kind of feel like a young person can go to almost, any school. And if they are going to be involved in the life of the university and work hard and be involved in clubs and, make lifelong friends, they could have a wonderful time. Or you can go to, the best school in the world. And if you, play video games instead of going to class, and if you don't get involved with clubs and things, then it doesn't matter where you are. So I feel like there's way too much emphasis on which school someone goes to.
Hmm. Well, thank you for that, Josh. And I think that's right. I mean, I'm not at all here saying that Ivy League schools aren't worth it, don't matter, et cetera. But boy, there's emphasis on the name of the school when nobody asked me anymore. In fact, I don't remember anybody asking me in my career where I went to school. I loved my school experience. But you really can make a good life in a lot of different places. That's a hard message for some kids who are really competitive, I imagine, Mary.
Well, I started my life in New York City since we both graduated at NYU. And my husband's a lawyer, and you can't get into the white shoe law firms unless you have a prominent degree from a top 10 school. And, I mean, those are the stakes. I mean, there are certain professions where you just can't get in. And even when I started at CBS News as an intern, they're taking in the Ivy League interns, and they took in NYU because Lawrence Tisch was chair of CBS back then and has a building named after him at NYU and solicited NYU students to come and work at CBS. So it depends on the profession. I don't know how it is now. I graduated in 1989, but certainly back in the 90s, certain professions, if you went to a brand-name school, it gets you in the door. If you didn't go into a brand-name school, you're not getting in the door.
Okay, in spots. For the most part, though,
depends on your profession that you're seeking.
Fair enough. What do you think you're going to tell your kids when they're worrying about where they're going? We got a little time to figure that out.
Well, I do have a little time, but you know, I do think that we will be putting an emphasis on them finding the right fit for them and their educational goals, rather than the name. The weather in that location, or some of the other ways that students choose schools, which truly I have seen throughout my career. But making sure that it's the right fit for them, you know, when they're that age, and for their educational goals and pursuits.
Lawrence writes to us and says, Evan, after my father passed away many years ago, I found in the files that my mother sent me that he had written letters, unbeknownst to me, to board of trustee members from various medical schools over the 3 years that I did not get in. I eventually did get in on my own merits and not to any of the schools he had written to. While I appreciated the fact that he never told me about this, I really resented the fact that he did it. Just grist for the mill. From Lawrence.
Helicopter parenting.
Really?
Well, I find that a very powerful reminder that there are times when parents think that what they're doing is helping their children, mm-hmm. and what they're doing is hindering. Huh. And Lawrence is saying, I'm sure he's glad that a letter to a board member never helped him. And I wonder how he thinks it would make him feel today if he found out that was the reason. And I think that's a profound point, because it applies so much more broadly. You think you're helping when you make sure your kid doesn't lose or doesn't face rejection, but you may not be helping. Thank you for that, Lawrence. Let me get back to your phone calls. Rich in Rochester next. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, Evan. How are you doing today?
Good. Very good.
You know, part of this whole calculus, too, is the degree that you get from a school. The money, it's become so prohibitive with the money, you have to really measure if it's worth getting a degree from the school you're at. I mean, what do you do with an Eastern philosophy degree from Yale in today's world? Hello?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do with that? Unless you go on to higher education, you're screwed. And also, you know, as much as one of your guests said that themselves as a parent, it didn't matter to them. I know a lot of my friends who it does matter to them where their child goes to school. So we can't discount the role that the parent does play. The parent does. A lot of parents do care, and they want their kids at these schools. And also, the money not only happens when they, this money isn't even an issue, it's not only an issue when they go to the school, it's an issue when they leave the school because of the connections. This permeates the entire system, even your legacy students. Is it really fair for a legacy student to get in because their parents went there, or because the building was named after them? I mean, to send people to jail over what they've done and call it fraud, whereas we have openly open and honest fraud by with the legacy students, with the student where they named the building at them. And advantage is there. And it just my frustration is that we're making a big deal over something that in so many ways is legal in other avenues in these schools.
Yeah, Rich, thank you for that. And that was a lot of the response that people had that we talked about at the outset of the program, which is that, well, you could just give money to schools and they usually let your kids in if you give enough. So the question of legacy, though, did come up with our guest from the University of Rochester and RIT in December. It's a whole separate discussion. I encourage you to look it up. It's a really good discussion with them. And again, two really strong voices, and I'm glad that they were here. They defended legacy admissions on the grounds of saying not that every legacy gets in automatically. That's not the case. Again, there are standards. But they said that they think campuses are strengthened by legacy admissions because there is a sense of history and appreciation for history, that our history matters, that if we think history and the past does have value, that students who come from legacy backgrounds have more of a connection to that, more of an appreciation to that, and are able to build a current campus that is more reflective of tradition and history. And I'm trying to summarize here, just to kind of be fair. I think maybe there's something there. I don't know. Mary, what do you think?
I think every college wants people who want to be there. And with a legacy admission, you have a family who's vested in that school. So, I mean, I definitely see their point. But I really think that it's tilted towards legacy donors and not just plain legacies. If you went to University of Rochester and, you didn't keep in touch with the school, didn't donate any money, doesn't matter if your kid applies to University of Rochester, does he or she get an edge? I don't know.
So you're saying legacy is really bolstered by whether you give
exactly.
money. And by the way,
and how active you are in alumni networks.
And by the way, you can try not to keep in touch with your school, but they will keep in
they
touch with you.
They will find you.
They know how to ask you for
they
money.
They found us all over the country.
Oh, I know. They're always asking me for money. Now, I mean, nothing wrong with asking, but yes, they will find you on that. Mm-hmm. I take that point. So
and it's a community, and the colleges is our community built by people. If you are active on the alumni network and you're doing things for the school, they want that. They want that school spirit. And if you're an alumni and your legacy and your children has that same kind of school spirit, why not? A company will want that.
Yeah, yeah. Karen in Brighton next. Go ahead, Karen.
Yes, hi. My one first quick comment is, my son, who is a lawyer, did intern at one of the top places in Washington, D.C., because he wanted the best of everything. And in the end, he said, yes, I want to work 80 hours to 100 hours a week. I'll go there. I'll stay there. But when the one person said about being a lawyer where you go to school, well, yeah, but it depends what law firm you want, too. And do you want to be happy or do you want to, But the one thing I really wanted to say was about one of my sons was determined, and he had already talked to me about this, that he wanted to preserve his childhood. So his point was that school was not going to be an important factor. And this kid was really gifted academically. But he said, when I look back and I go to college, I don't want to realize that I lost my childhood because I can't get it back. So he was determined not to take any AP courses, da-da-da-da-da. And I knew it would work out in the end, and he went to a college that wasn't Ivy League, and he became an adult, and he worked really hard, and he ended up at Georgetown Law School. So my point is that all is not lost if one leg of the journey isn't exactly the way it should be. I had a choice to listen to my son and say, okay, so you don't want to make school a priority, based on his terms or not, with some guidance, to be sure. But I think it's important to really allow our kids to be true to their own journey. And that's what's really in my heart about where these kids should go and be happy.
Karen, thank you. True to your own journey is something that Mary Chow and Emily Rittenberg have been talking about, not as a parent trying to force your kids into whatever life you think they should have, or a life like yours, or a life that you think is safer or better, having some autonomy. That's where you are now with your daughter, right?
Oh, absolutely. What we're looking for is fit, and I try to teach her that. Let's look for a fit school. Beyond the schools, we're looking at the communities? Could you see yourself living here for 4 years? She's more introverted. Is this a good fit for an introvert? So you look at little nuances when you're going on these college tours, and you try to teach a child that you look for fit and not a brand name.
And Emily, even at the younger ages, I think this question applies to parents who, you know, have to be open to their kids liking to do things that they may not sort of geek out on. I now geek out on things I never thought I would because my son's into it, and I guess we're doing it.
You know.
But there's a pull, because sometimes you could just fall back into comfort zones, even if that's not what the child wants.
Exactly.
I think that extends all the way down, I guess, as young as what? I mean, maybe even grade school, right? I mean, elementary
even
school.
Younger. Yeah. I mean, yes. Our children are not ours. They have their own journey to go on, and we are witnesses to their journey, and we should be supporters of their journey, but it's not our journey. Their childhood is not for us to relive our own childhood through. It's their process. So, you know, just an example is, you know, when my eldest son was 4 or 5 years old and he got into Pokemon cards, and I was dreading it that I was going to have to buy all these cards.
Are you living my life?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Hand to forehead. It was awful. I thought it was going to be awful, but that's how he learned to read, was by reading these cards to himself. So it ended up being a huge blessing in disguise. And I was glad that I was able to, you know, see that I was not totally into it, but like let him pursue it anyways. So
that is literally the thing I was thinking about when I said I'm geeking out on things I never thought I would, because that's what he wants.
Yep. Right.
We're doing Pokemon. It's fascinating. And NPR, by the way, talked about the student impact of this story that we've been talking about this hour and that you've been hearing this week, this college admission scam with 50 people arrested. We're talking parents, including celebrity parents, Felicity Huffman, Lori Loughlin, but also admissions counselors and people who set up this scam. And what's the question is, what happens when students see the story? Well, here NPR went out to a number of these campuses where these students were getting in when their parents were sort of bribing their way in. And this is a really profound comment, I think, here. Waruguru Nitarangu is a senior at UCLA. She says she's heard the same qualms from a friend who was rejected from Stanford. And here's what Nitarangu told NPR. Said, at the time, my friend probably just felt like, okay, there's probably better people than me, more competitive people. It's why I didn't get in. But now, knowing that people could just pay their way in and take my spot, that's really disheartening. And Nitarangu went on to say, it is especially infuriating to her as a student of color who has heard people rail against affirmative action for years. This is what she told NPR. People say that we only get in because of affirmative action, or that we don't deserve to be here. So it's ironic that the people telling us this actually paid their way in or their kids' way in, end quote. That is profound.
Mm-hmm.
That is a powerful point, that the next time you think about corporate welfare, the next time you think about affirmative action, think about who's paying their way into places they don't otherwise deserve to be. That is powerful stuff that NPR brought, I thought, from there. I want to grab, Joanne in Brighton. We'll try to squeeze in a few more comments. Go ahead, Joanne.
I just want to comment that where is this coming from? There's a lot of pressure on the kids, and it's coming from the adults. When people come in contact with parents of high school students, or when they come up in contact with the high school students, they often say, where are you applying to school? Where did you get in? There's so much focus on that instead of, what are you interested in? What is your passion? What do you want to study? And I think it's really unfortunate, because kids are just judged based on where they're going to school.
Mm. Well, thank you, Joanne. And Joanne's calling from Brighton, which is a district where, I mean, it's very competitive in the district. And I think in so many ways, in a good way, in so many good ways, I just hope students don't feel like that's the only mark. What school did you get into? What does that say about you? That's who you are as a person. Joel writes to us and says, I think the largest question should be, what is college even for? That's a question that parents and teachers rarely work to answer for students in their care. It's a good question. What's college for? What do you think college is for, Mary?
To develop as a person, and also to learn skills that would make you marketable and be able to pay bills, pay the rent, and move on as an adult. It's a continuation of your childhood into adulthood. And you know, I mentioned in a column that we hired a college counselor or a college, a private college coach, and I interviewed a few. I did not go with the one that specifically focused on Elite and Ivy. I went with the company that focused on finances. And that's an important lesson for young people. You know, the financial end, this is $300,000 sticker price. Your parents will still pay a lot. What is your return on investment? And what will you do when you leave the nest? And what do you intend to study when you go to college?
Hmm. Emily, what do you think college is for?
College is for an education. As you were saying before, if you want party, if you want life experiences, if you want connections with other kids, you don't have to do that at college. You can take a gap year, you could get a job, you can go travel. There's many other things you can do with your life right after high school that don't involve throwing away thousands and thousands of dollars and taking away the opportunity from someone else who really, really wants the education. So college is for the education.
I want to thank our guests for taking the time to be here. And I think, you know, I think this is probably the start of a lot of people saw the Justice Department's comments this week and said, well, that's the end of this investigation. I think it is reignited and it's kind of the start of a new conversation about what we expect to be the standards. And everybody wants your kids to do well. But boy, when people can just pay their way right over your head, you know, it's obviously fundamentally unfair, but it feels like a real form of inequality that is offensive, and I understand. And so, Mary Chow, good luck to you and your family.
Well, thank you.
You got to process. What year is your daughter?
She is a junior, so by this time next year, we'll find out what happens.
Oh, boy, I'm trying to remember when that actually happens. So it's usually by the spring, right?
Right, you know? Right around now.
Or maybe even before the end of the year. Possibly?
Hopefully.
Depends on
hopefully.
If she applies early action, early decision, that business.
And I don't miss that, but I'll be facing that as a parent eventually. Thanks for opening up about it in the Democrat and Chronicle. I thought it was a really interesting read, and it got a lot of people thinking, and thanks for coming on the program today. If you want to read Mary's piece, we'll post it on our various platforms, as she wrote for the Democrat and Chronicle. And Emily Rittenberg, thank you for taking the time. She's not only a mother, but coach and owner of Nurture Now LLC. Nice to have you back here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a beautiful afternoon, everyone. It's gorgeous out there. Rob Braden is the engineer of connections, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you Friday on member-supported public radio.